Good morning, I'm Roland Rohmeiser of the University of Miami. And again, my slides seem to be cut off at the bottom, but I hope you can see the important things. So I will talk a little bit about my new empirical wave retrieval algorithm that's supposed to solve some of the problems that Chris explained. And in addition, I will talk about some general data processing enhancements that we have developed to be able to deal with our Scansar images. And to explain this a little bit, here is a slide that shows the advantage of Scansar, a regular C-band SAR, like the original ERS-1, for example, that was launched in the early 1990s. Would give us a swath width of about 100 kilometers with a spatial resolution on the order of 25 meters. Now, these newer SARs have another mode called the Scansar mode that permits swath widths up to 450 or 500 kilometers at C-band. And as you can see, we. Is this working? Not. We have a much better. Coverage, even this is not working now. Yes. So we have a much better coverage here. We can get a much better picture of our typhoon, but the price we have to pay for this is a reduced spatial resolution. And there are some artifacts that result from the fact that the Scansar is actually using multiple sub-swathes and switching between them. And so there are some new problems coming with this new technology that we have to take into account when we process the data for wave of wind retrievals. And here is one of the problems. It's called scanopping. I hope you can see it here. There are some wavy artifacts here in the image. So these are these two windows here. This results from the Scansar way of scanning over the multiple swathes. We find this in almost all Scansar images of ocean scenes. And you can imagine that when we now use something like this and we compute an image spectrum, we see some spikes in the spectrum that result from these patterns. Robin Jochen or Chris tried to retrieve it. To determine the wind direction, maybe the algorithm believes that these are wind streaks and it gets the wrong wind direction. So we have to filter it out. That's a little difficult to do because it's a multiplicative effect and so on and so on. So it requires some work, but we were able to develop a filter for it. Now I will show you what the filter can do. Look at this red frame. I hope this will work. Filter is now being applied from the left to the right, and I hope you see that the pattern goes away. Now the same with the one on the right. So that's our scalloping filter, and it looks like it's very easy to do, but it costs us some months of work to develop it such that it can easily be applied to all the images. But this was a really important step to be able to work with all the Scansar images on a routine basis. Here's another filter. This was done by Chris Luckerman. Here you see some things like this bright line and some dark lines here that come from the beam seams between the subswaths and another thing you call the nadir ambiguity. This is bright line. And Chris developed a filter that will do the following. Watch again this picture. That's now coming from the bottom and removing these artifacts. And so after applying the scalloping filter that I developed and this beam seam filter that Chris developed, the basic quality of our Scansar images is almost as good as the quality of the strip map image. But of course, we still have the disadvantage that the resolution is reduced. As Chris pointed out, you cannot expect to resolve waves that are much shorter than 200 meters. Now, another brief introduction here about ocean wave imaging. When you look at ocean waves with a SAR, you have a variety of modulation mechanisms there. You have the tilt modulation of the local incidence angle with the local slope of the wave. You have a hydrodynamic modulation of the short scale, small scale roughness along the waves. You have the nonlinear SAR imaging artifact, what we call velocity bunching. And all this depends on the wavelength and the wave direction. And you can imagine that when the waves get very high under typhoon conditions, you have all kinds of additional problems. The nonlinearities get stronger. The shape of the waves gets more complicated, less sinusoidal. You have wave breaking, you have spray, and all kinds of things. So inverting those observed signatures in the SAR image into an ocean wave spectrum is not an easy business, especially under typhoon conditions. Now, Chris has presented his approach, which is a very established approach. You use the image and you apply a Fourier transform, you get an image spectrum, and then you apply the what we call the modulation transfer function. You get something that you believe it's the ocean wave spectrum. You can analyze it to retrieve the peak wavelength, peak direction, and significant wave heights. He is doing this with some success, but he mentioned it that there are some nonlinearities in the imaging mechanism that are neglected. Maybe for these long waves, that's okay, because the long waves are still basically sinusoidal waves, even under typhoon conditions. But there are some other problems here. As Chris pointed out, he doesn't see the very short waves below 200 meters wavelength or so. So he cannot account for the contributions of those waves to the significant wave height, for example. He neglects all the special nonlinearities that come with very high waves. And in addition, you have noticed that in some areas of the images, this algorithm cannot see any waves at all. So there are some areas where he cannot say anything about the peak wave length and peak wave direction and the significant wave height. And that's fine. We knew this in advance, and everybody knows that this can happen. But of course, we wanted to make some progress here and put some innovations into the game. And so we had the idea to try some empirical things here that might enable us to estimate the contributions of the short waves and to get some results for the areas where it's not so easy to see the waves, and so forth. So it's now an empirical model, and that's always a little suboptimal when you have to use an empirical model that's not based on a hard theoretical foundation. But the wind retrieval people like Jochen Hausmann, they have used empirical model functions for over 30 years, and that's well accepted. And it's very accepted that if you really want to get the best possible retrievals, it's sometimes better to use an empirical model function than trying to model everything in full detail, which usually will not work perfectly well. Now, the empirical wave retrieval scheme is shown here. It starts again with an image and the Fourier transform. But now, instead of applying the modulation transfer function, we do a direct analysis of our image spectrum. We get some peak directions and wavelengths in the image spectrum, and then we use empirical functions here to convert the peak wavelength of the image spectrum into the peak wavelength of the ocean wave spectrum. And the empirical function for the significant wave height here is even mainly based on the mean image intensity and not so much on the spectrum. And this was developed using radar set images of hurricanes from 2006 and corresponding bump spectra. It turned out that the significant wave heights depend most strongly on the mean image intensity and the peak direction, as it's shown here. And this means as soon as we are able to estimate the local peak wave direction, roughly, even if we don't see the waves in detail, we can usually estimate what's the peak wave direction from the surrounding directions and so on, then we are able to to estimate significant wave heights. We don't really need to see the waves in full quality as it would be required with the traditional algorithm. Okay, and here is an example result. This is a RadarSat 2 image of Hurricane Maggie on the 15th of October. And this is Chris's result. I think he already showed it in his presentation. His peak wavelengths, they look a little noisy, but that's just a matter of how you filter the spectra. This is the result that I obtain. Looks similar, looks a little smoother, that's a matter of filtering. But I get results more or less in the same regions here where he is getting results, and there are some gray regions where we don't see the waves. This is the corresponding result from Dave Walker's Swanton model run, and you can see that it doesn't agree perfectly well, but that's also a matter of how you define the peak wavelength and so on. So this shouldn't be taken too seriously. We have to analyze the spectra in more detail to see how well this really agrees. Now, look at the significant wave heights. This is what Chris obtains. In the gray regions, he doesn't get any significant wave height estimates. Here in the region near the hurricane or the typhoon eye, where the model predicts a quite high significant wave height, the traditional algorithm here doesn't get a very high wave height. That's because he doesn't see the contributions of the short waves, and maybe he doesn't account for all the non-linearities. My empirical model function here is able to generate something that looks somewhat similar to the model result. And as you can see, I'm able to cover the whole area, including the gray regions, because I can always extrapolate the directions, the peak directions from the other areas here into the gray areas, and that's sufficient to get up to mean the image intensity that I take from here to estimate the significant wave heights. So we have a better coverage, and we get a somewhat better retrieval of the significant wave height near the center. This is so far just a comparison with the model. It doesn't mean too much. We need to do some more comparisons, but of course it was very nice to see that it agrees relatively well without any specific tuning for these typhoon cases from last year. Here's another case on the 17th where Magic was close to the Philippines. This is the peak wavelength. Again, there are some similarities and some differences. And again, both of us here, Chris and myself, we have the gray regions where we don't really see the waves, but I can estimate some directions here that I can then put into my significant wave height model function, and this is what we obtain. And unfortunately, the agreement is now not as good as in the other case, but if you would be able to see these little arrows here in more detail, you would see that the wave directions that we can see in the SAR image and that are probably correct, they are different from the directions that the Swan model obtains, and so there seems to be some systematic difference here. We have to investigate this in more detail, what's really the problem. Furthermore, it looks like my model function overestimates the significant wave height a little bit here on this side where we have the very small incidence angles. That's probably a tuning problem, and that will probably be improved in the near future. So there are some things that work quite well, and some things that are still a little strange and that need some more tuning and some more investigation, but we believe that this is a promising approach for getting a little more wave information out of the images than with the traditional technique. And here's my summary. So we have developed these new filters that for the first time enable us to use scansar images for wave and wind retrievals on a routine basis. We don't need to be lucky to have images without those artifacts. There's the MTF modulation transfer function based wave retrieval approach as presented by Chris, which works to get some information out of the image, but it has some limitations and it underestimates the total significant wave height because it doesn't see the shorter waves. Now we have the new empirical wave retrieval algorithm but estimates of eight parameters from properties of the image at the image spectrum. That's an idea adopted from the LIMP community a little bit. Can account for effects that the MTF approach cannot account for. And we are able, at least we believe this at the moment, to get significant wavefront estimates in areas where no wave signatures are visible that could be exploited by the conventional approach. Now, here this summarizes what we are planning to do in the future. We need to analyze our results in more detail. We need to do more comparisons with models and with measurements. Maybe there is some more tuning, some more refinement of the algorithms required. Then, of course, it would be very interesting to combine the two algorithms. That would be another approach for finding out how much contribution to the significant wave height is coming from the short waves that are not resolved, because Chris can estimate the contribution of the long waves. I can estimate the contribution of all waves. Then one idea that Jochen Horstmann is pushing very much is to combine the wind and wave retrievals such that we take the waves into account in the wind retrievals and we take the winds into account in the wave retrievals, so we can come up with a combined, consolidated wave and wind result where everything makes sense from a physical point of view. So there are many interesting things that we are planning to do in the near future. So that's the end for now. Thank you for the attention.
primarily on the scan side, which is because we wanted to have a large area covered. So inherently, the resolution is already 100 meters or so of those images. That means the waves or the features are, let's say, 200 meters or larger. Now, if we go into better resolution, you know, we have to give up on what we cover. But let's say we do better in terms of predicting where we want the image, and then we go to 10 meters, then that will change, you know, the... So that's maybe the next time we can look at getting
All right, I think we're going to have to move on. So Hans is going to present a summary of the SAR.
Thank you.